and welcome to this AAT podcast. This is the first in a series of three podcasts for the AAT. The three podcasts are going to be on leadership, influencing and persuading in business, and how to manage those unmotivated team members. So, leadership. What do we think leadership is, and who do we know that's brilliant at leadership? Great leaders, what do they say? Who do you know who's inspired you in the past? And what specifically did they do to enable you to feel that they were such a great leader of you and perhaps your team? And with these memories in mind as we go through this podcast, to remember that person and to identify specifically what you heard them saying and what you saw them doing, and to be able to copy that is one very powerful tool to enable you to improve your leadership skills. Now, in this podcast, we're going to be looking at a basic introduction, and I'm going to be taking you through five clear steps, almost a process to think about as you start your process with any new team. So first of all, what is the difference between being a great manager and being a great leader? Managers are, for me, they are there to comply, to almost go through a process of activities. And great managers, yes, businesses need great managers, but managers, for me, do a series of activities. They set objectives. They produce a plan to translate the objectives into a clear picture, usually a plan, and use that to communicate to people in the team exactly what they expect of them. A good manager will then set up systems to monitor performance and then will exert control to check if there's any differences between what was expected and what has actually happened. It is a process of activities. And for a manager to be really successful, they have to be there. They have to be there to exercise these activities. Leadership is different. It's really different. Yes, it's all those things that I've just described, but leadership is about motivating and creating a new sense of purpose within a team. Leadership is all about creating an emotional response so people not only want to work, but they are motivated to increase the performance and increase the results. They have something that they can own in the process of making changes in business. And when I think of the key things of what a leader does, they create a vision, a sense of purpose. Leaders are very flexible and they have a real ability and sense to be able to motivate individuals and empower them. A great example of leadership is when, for example, results still happen even when the leader isn't there. You get self-managed teams. And the five steps that I'm going to be taking you through are going to enable you to structure and to implement some key skills to enable you to get to that point. Now, before we get onto those five steps, I'm going to be asking you to think about your diary. And if I came along and saw what was in your diary, where is your time going? And what we're looking for in great leadership is what John O'Dare spoke about. He talked about the balance between task-driven leadership, team-driven leadership, and leadership focused on the individual. And these three aspects of team, task, and individual need to be evenly balanced to exercise really effective leadership. Now, let's be honest with ourselves. If we look in our diaries, what proportion of our time do we spend in one-on-one conversations motivating individuals? And how much of our time is spent in group discussions, building and leading teams? I find that with finance professionals, even if they have really frequent team meetings, then even on the agendas of those team meetings, it tends to be very task and very issue driven. And if we're going to be really excellent leaders and inspire our people, we need to invest our time and skill evenly across task, team, and individual. So I'm just going to leave you with that thought. The second thought I'd like you to think about is it's always a fantastic tool to think with the end in mind. In 12 months' time, how would you like your teams and the people that work for you to describe you? What words would you like them to use to describe you as a person, you as their leader, you as a business person? And I'd like you to write down, if you can, some of the keywords that you would like to be described as. Because as we move through these five steps, I'd like you to be thinking, what can I do and what can I do to embed in the conversations that I have to ensure that in 12 months' time, this group of people will describe me in this way? Okay, moving on to the five steps, I'm going to use a key assumption throughout these five steps in that there is no one leadership style that is appropriate for every team in every context. A fantastic leader will assess a situation and be very pragmatic. A great leader is one that can change, one that is flexible. And if you are expecting people in your team to implement change so they get better results, then the responsibility is on you to have the greatest degree of change in your personal style. So that is the assumption that we're going to be working on. The five steps are setup, diagnosis, matching an appropriate leadership style, and then number four, applying that leadership style, and number five, empowerment. So let's move on to step number one, setting up the team from the beginning. And I'm going to be talking about some key characteristics of what I've seen from all the research about tremendously fantastic leadership and teams. The first thing I'm going to call on is Kazenbach and Smith. And what they did, they were two Harvard and McKinsey researchers, and they looked at 80 organizations in the US, from small and medium-sized organizations up to multinational. They didn't look at sports teams, it was purely business. And there's some key themes here in this first step of setting up a team. The first thing that they recognized is that all the successful teams, high-performing teams, had a very strong sense of purpose. Not only did they know what the purpose was of the team, but they could also articulate it. They could also say it was also important. Now, you know, in business, there's mission statements, there's statements of purpose, and they might be done once a year, or they might be done by another set of people somewhere in the organization. What I am talking about is for every team to have for them something that is meaningful, something makes a difference to them, and something that they can relate to and identify with. And just to give you an example of this, I had the privilege of hearing a speaker last year, and he was an Olympic gold medal winner in the 2000 Olympics. They won the men's coxes four, and their sense of purpose was very simple. Their sense of purpose for their team was, will it make the boat go faster? And if it did, then this enabled the team to agree that yes, they were going to do it. If it didn't have a direct link with their sense of purpose of, will it make the boat go faster, they decided as a team not to do it, to the extent that they did not go to the opening ceremony because the team agreed it would not make the boat go faster. So when we talk about developing a purpose statement for a team, it is so critical, A, because it provides glue, a common sense of why that team exists, and a secondly, on a practical day-to-day level, it enables the team to decide what they are going to choose to do and what they're going to choose not to do. It helps prioritization. So to spend some time in those team discussions A, setting up that purpose statement, and secondly, relating back to it at every team meeting is critical. We're still in setup at the moment, and we've been talking about the purpose statement. The second thing I'm going to talk about in this section is the importance of team values. Team values bring the organisation to life. They are really what is the most important thing to the people within that team. They are not corporate values. These are the values created by the team. What is really important to them on a day-to-day basis? And we all know, and we can all guess, that most people will say things like, it's important that I feel as though I'm listened to. It's important that I feel as though I make a difference. I want to work in a team that shows respect. And for you as their leader, you could probably anticipate the majority of things that they will talk about. Great leaders facilitate the opportunity for everybody in the team to talk about and to express what is important to them. Great leaders facilitate that and document it and make it come to life. And this is your role as a leader. Team values. When everything is going great, values are not really called upon. However, in times of chaos and uncertainty and conflict, if you have taken time to set up the values at the beginning when the team was brought together, this will enable you to use them to come to an agreed outcome and an agreed way forward to manage behaviour and manage performance. And that's why I think values are essential. Okay, we're still in setup. We've been talking about purpose, about values. The third that Kazenbach and Smith identified was the need for aligned, clear, articulated and documented goals. Now, I'm sure everybody in your teams has a roles and responsibilities, maybe even a contract of employment, but very frequently and often those roles and responsibilities need to be reviewed with the individual so they can connect and make sense of how what they're trying to achieve fits into the wider team goals. And there's a clear direct alignment there. And then taking it up one level, how the team goals contribute and are aligned to the organisation's goals. And in this alignment and this clarity of what you expect from everybody in the team and the team as a whole, again, that's one way of creating a sense of purpose. Now, the larger the organisation, maybe some of you work in large organisations where it's difficult to find out who is responsible for what. A great leader spends time to ensure that everybody knows what they're expected to do, but they also have a degree of understanding of how everybody else in the team contributes. And maybe that team is quite a wide team made up of many sub-teams. And therefore, as leaders, you know that you're going to have to invest more of your time to bring those teams together. Just to quote something that may ring true with you, that may be relevant to you in your organisation, is everybody, somebody, anybody and nobody. And I'm just going to read these few statements to you. There was an important job to be done and everyone was sure that somebody would do it. Anybody could have done it, but nobody did it. Somebody got angry about it because it was everybody's job. Everybody thought that anybody could have done it, but nobody realised that everybody wouldn't do it. It ended up that everybody blamed somebody when nobody did what anybody could have done. And I think that sums up the consequences of leaders not spending time to clarify and document goals and responsibilities. Step number two in this process of leadership is called diagnosis. And this is all about every leader taking a pragmatic approach to look at two aspects of a team. Because we know with teams, we rarely have the opportunity to select and pre-select who we would like to be in the team. Usually the team's already set up and the leader is new to the team. Sometimes you inherit a pre-existing team, and sometimes you don't get the ideal people coming to your team. It's very much a compromise. So we have to look at the context. Great leaders look at the context. They look at the outcomes and the results that the team needs to achieve, the context of the team, i.e. the history of the team, and also the blend of the individuals within that team, of how it's balanced up. And this is what we're going to do in diagnosis. We're going to use two templates to help you review what the current context is of that team, its strengths and its weaknesses. The first one is Belbin, Meredith Belbin. She spent 9 years studying behaviours of highly performing teams, looking at the different core personality traits and trying to identify what blend of roles within a team made highly successful teams. Now, when we talk about behaviour, we're talking about a tendency to behave, contribute and interrelate with others in a particular way. And Belbin, in looking at team dynamics, identified that there was 9 key roles within a team. I'm not going to go through all 9, but what I'm going to do is to summarise that some players in a team are action orientated. These people are the doers. They shape the chaos into a clear way forward. You've got implementers who love to plan, and hopefully you've got some people who love to see things through to the end, to complete things. The second category are people-orientated roles. These are the people who connect and bring together people. They are team workers. They are resource investigators. They may not have the resources, but they can network and find somebody who can. And we've also got people who are great coordinators who can bring people together in a systematic way to produce an end result. And the third key category under Belbin is one of analytical roles. These are the intellectual heavyweights that enable a logical and rational analysis of the best way forward. These people are evaluators. And in this category, you might have your technical experts as well. Now, in establishing a team as a great leader to understand the individual behaviours and the way that individuals prefer to interrelate with other people is an extremely powerful tool. And in this module of leadership, I would encourage any leader to take the time to find out more about Belbin and to use it within a team meeting context with your team so individuals within the team can understand how they contribute, the team can understand how it's balanced, and the team can understand its key strengths and weaknesses. So this is going to help you as a leader to bring everybody together. The second thing to look at is not only the individuals in the blend, but also the stage that the team is in its level of development. Now, Tuckman gave us 4 key stages of team development. It gives a nice structured way of diagnosing where a team is. The 4 stages are forming, storming, norming, and performing. And as I'm describing these 4 stages, you might take the time to think about your own team and your own environment and to try and think where your current team is. So the forming stage is very much a testing phase. It's when the team first comes together. It's almost like the honeymoon stage where everybody is very polite and there's a high degree of commitment to the team, although the competency levels in the team might be quite low. They're having to find what's expected of them, for example. There might be quite a lot of anxiety as people are trying to find out how they fit into the team. And in this testing phase, this forming stage, there's a high degree of reliance on the leader to be very explicit and in a way to direct and tell the team specifically what is expected of them and how they are expected to undertake and deliver the results. So that's phase number one of forming. Once that is established, then the team can go into a second phase. And this is known as storming, where people are vying to find out where their power sits within the team. There's quite a lot of conflict and subgroups can start developing. This is the stage of conflict and it can be quite noisy and people can feel very stuck and probably quite isolated in this stage of storming. Here, the role of the leader is very much, again, to provide direction, shape, and to facilitate the team as quickly as possible out of storming and into the next phase of norming. Norming is very much the settling down. People have a clearer idea of their roles and responsibilities. They're developing the skills so they can see the results coming through. They can see that they're making a difference. Policies and procedures are being more established and people know what's expected of them. Again, in norming and the settling down stage, there's more open dialogue, better listening and better exchanges of information. In fact, in this third stage of getting organised, it's very much a calming down stage, a getting on with things stage. And finally, stage number four, known as performing. The team are delivering results. They can manage their own team. There's a degree of excitement because at this stage, the team are really performing well. And the leader can effectively stand back a little bit because less control is needed because the team are very clear how they're working together and how they fit into the team and how they contribute. There's more of a sharing of the leadership. And a really good example for me when a team is in performing, a great test is when that team meeting will continue to happen in a productive way, even though the leader or the manager is not there. Step number three is match appropriate leadership style to what you've seen and diagnosed from step two. And what I'm going to be talking about is what's described as situational leadership. You might remember me saying that there's no one leadership style that can be applied to every situation and to every team. So in looking at those four stages of forming, storming, norming and performing, and having diagnosed the individuals within the team, we then have to think about what style we're going to match to those four phases of forming, storming, norming, and performing. When we look at leadership style, when a team first comes together in the forming phase, then that team needs very much a high degree of direction and needs to be told specifically what needs to happen. It's more of a specific dictation so they can be clear what is needed of them. As the team goes into storming, the team needs a high degree of support, so more of a coaching style and a facilitation style to enable those teams to receive all the information that they need to know where they fit and how they need to work together as a team. So lots of facilitation in the storming phase. We need to get out of that stage as quickly as possible and get on to norming. Here, a low degree of direction. At this stage, the team should know what is expected of them. And again, more of a coaching and supporting role to enable individuals within the team that have increased their ability, increased their competency level, should enable them to move into the final stage of performing where the team are self-managed. Wouldn't that be great if every team was self-managed, delivered brilliant results? And here, a low degree of direction and also low support. You can really stand back and share the role of leader across the team. So that is step three. Step four is how to apply it. And I think that the most critical activity in applying leadership style And perhaps one of the least recognised is that of meeting skills, because every group conversation is effectively a team meeting. And I know in organisations, and you probably know people in your organisations too, where the team meeting is something that happens once a month to talk about the issues and the tasks and what needs to be done, and usually the minutes of the previous meetings. Finance professionals say to me things like, I'd like my team to be more proactive. I'd like my team to show more initiative. And I ask them the question, well, when do you talk about what it looks like and what it sounds like to show initiative? How much of your team meetings are spent identifying and giving examples of great behaviour that can be associated with showing initiative and being proactive, for example? So in being a great leader, a team meeting needs to happen, but secondly, a great leader will innovate and facilitate what happens in the room. So in applying leadership style, you have to be in control. So all those things that you know make up a great meeting, I'm just going to assume already happens. You already have control over identifying the outcome from your team meeting, of setting an agenda, of having a clear purpose and somebody to take the minutes, and most importantly, somebody to chair and to timekeep. I'm assuming that already happens. So every dialogue, everybody's got confidence that it's going to make a difference and finish on time. What great leaders do as well, and I'm sure you'd like to know what they do in their meetings, is that they are very conscious of building in exercises so everybody is engaged. And more importantly, everybody in a team discussion has something to do. If you don't give people something to do in a meeting, they will usually find something else to do, like thinking about what's happening in their email or thinking about their lunch. So great leaders have to be very creative in the way that they communicate and the way that they structure group discussions in such a way to get maximum participation, maximum communication, and maximise the ability of the team to make great decisions as a team and to innovate and sort out conflict. And if you'd like some tips on how to do that, I'm going to give you three. Some of your team meetings need to be stood up, for example. You need to re-energise them. So the more you can get people to stand up, it re-energises those what can be quite boring meetings. Using lots of visuals and asking people to take ownership for certain parts of the agenda. And to make sure that on that agenda, you've got a balance between talking about what needs to be done, the task, talking about what individuals need to feel great and to feel brilliant, and to talk about as a team what needs to happen to have better communication, improve participation, and improve decision making. So a great leader is a fantastic facilitator. And step five, I think every leader aspires to get to step five, where the team are self-managed and empowered. They all feel involved, they all feel valued, they are extremely productive, and not only do they want to come to work, but when they're at work, they don't want to go home from work. They feel more energised when they leave the office than when they actually come into the office. Wouldn't that be a great thing? Wouldn't that make your life so much easier? And to get to this step five means time and effort needs to be invested in making sure that steps 1, 2, 3, and 4 are set up and you have control of them. My name is Amanda Morehouse. Thank you for listening to this AAT podcast.